Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. As always, it's Nick here again from grayscalegorilla.com, and we have some special guests, as always, today. Why don't you guys introduce yourself?
Chad here.
And I'm Chris. And we're not special. We're here all the time.
Yeah, but we're still special.
You're special in my heart.
Okay.
We're coming off of the week of Half-Rez, and
who
is still exhausted? Anybody?
I think I recovered on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, it was the same for me.
It was an incredible Half-Rez. It was by far our biggest Half-Rez. We had over 300 people show up and register the night of, which is our biggest one ever. Man, that thing started with 90 people in a room.
Yep.
And now there's 300.
That's crazy.
300,
that's
and almost 100 people lined up outside the building waiting to get in, which is kind of an amazing sight.
Yeah, that was probably the highlight for me. It's just because, you know, seeing the people lined up outside, it's like, you know, like you're in a band or something.
Yeah, I had a show. I didn't even have a drink yet, and I had like the biggest grin on my face. Like, just like, wow, look at all these people showing up to check out this thing that we did.
That was cool. Incredible. We got a ton of great feedback. I think this year was really stepped up on all around. I wanted to thank you guys for your help, obviously, and everyone out there that's listening that helped out at all with Half-Rez. We couldn't do that without you, including our sponsors. Just thank you guys. It was by far, I think, the most organized and by far the biggest Half-Rez ever. And the guests this year were bonkers. I know we teased them last week, but you guys did great on your talks. And actually, we didn't really mention what we were talking about. So,
I was keeping mine a secret.
Chris was a secret. Chris shows up and opens up Cinema 4D R6, not R16.
It's not R6. It's Release 6.
It's Release 6.
Release 6 XL.
I love the XL, dude. XL.
Showed us a little bit about how Cinema 4D worked back then, which was what, year 2000?
Yep, 2000.
And then
the first one I ever used.
Chad showed us kind of the history of hardware and software and how expensive 3D was just not too long ago, and kind of talked a little bit about where he thinks it's going. So in short,
and a lot of exploding heads. There was a lot. I don't think anybody really knew there was going to be gore in my presentation, but
it opened right up with gore with that photo of you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you know, I was debating on that whether or not I should show it, and maybe. Maybe we'll put it in the comments for the show, but I'm not sure if you're squeamish, you might not want to see that. It's how I got this scar. And if you're looking at us on YouTube, you'll see the scar right there.
It's a pretty gory photo, man.
Yeah, it is.
I thought that was like a Halloween photo.
Yeah, a lot of people think it's fake, but it's not. That really happened
to
my head.
It's a cartoonishly large lump.
That's why they. Have you ever heard the term goose
ball.
Egg?
Oh, goose egg? Yeah, golf ball, yeah.
Yeah, same thing. It's like, you know, like a cartoon, like you just get a lump on your head. Anyway.
Well, yeah. I'm sure for those of you thinking out there in thinky think land, hey, did you guys record it and are you going to post these things online? I'm very, very proud to announce that we not only recorded it, but it worked.
Oh, I
got
the footage.
Got the footage back. You haven't checked yet?
No.
Oh, no. I can't announce it officially. I just jinxed it.
Like the files are saved on the Mac.
Oh, gosh.
Sure. I know that they're there. They exist.
I'm terrified. I haven't
exported them.
Okay. Well, I won't go any further because I'm not going to jinx it, but I'll tell you the audio is there. So we'll at least be able to release some audio versions of the presentations. And to follow up the rest of the presentations as well, our buddies Nick and Eric from Run Kick Shout did a presentation about their start of their company, their design studio, some of the challenges. That was awesome. They did a great job. And then, of course, Beeple from Beeple sat down and did a Q&A with us, which was really fun. Kind of ended the night with some laughs. And that was really fun. Beeple was
He was awesome.
Hilarious and super humble and just what a great character. So it was really cool that he came down. And so we'll be releasing those as we get them together as well. So thanks again, man. I don't want to keep it all about Half-Rez the whole time, but it's just such a big part of our year. And we really get to see friends of ours that we don't see all year. They fly in, you know, it's such a big part, and it's such a short amount of time. I feel like I never get to hang out enough with everybody.
Yeah, okay. The night goes by so fast, dude.
So
it's crazy.
So fast. And we get there at like 2, and we left at 1:30.
Yeah.
So, geez, that's almost 12 hours in that venue, not leaving the building.
I know.
And it just disappears instantly. Nick, lots I just checked the rye. PC recording, so the release 6 stuff is recorded.
Oh, right. Okay, oh, good. One down. We just have two more to go, right?
Those I know saved. So I'm 99% sure.
Look for some recording soon then from Half Res. And we also have a video our buddy Sergio's making, so we could look for that really soon. And really, like, we're already planning next year, so this is here to stay. And if you're interested in next year, make sure you keep an eye out, because I think we're ramping up to filling this place up. Every year it gets bigger and bigger. So keep an eye out for that. We'd love to have you. What else has been going on, guys? I got back to the studio here, unpacked, feeling good.
I've already unpacked, and I've even hung up my Half-Res skateboard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and nice.
Look at that.
Yeah, we gave out some prizes, incredible prizes this year, including some Half-Res skateboards, which is it's so nuts.
It's a dream come true for me.
I need to put one on my... Can you decorate my wall? I'm kind of a little plain over
sure,
here.
Yeah. And then, I stole one of the signs from Half-Res, too. And yep, put it over there.
That's good. It gets to live on. Yeah. No, and I've got my new backdrop here, and this is temporary because after Half-Res, there was a little after party at another bar, and then we got kicked out of there almost right away because it was super late. So we all went to my house, and so we had a bunch of people hanging out at my house at like 3 a.m, pissing my brothers off because they were trying to sleep on
the
sofa.
Oh my God.
Like,
wait, your brothers were sleeping on your sofa?
One was sleeping on the sofa, the other was in his room, and yeah, they got one got up and left at like 3 a.m and drove home an hour. But like, well,
no, wow.
So there's like 10 people, 10 people hanging out, and everybody's going shh, 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 but so loud that it was like,
and only the way a drunk person could. Yeah.
But anyway, everybody ends upstairs, and then all my furniture got rearranged. Like, my desk got spun around, the sofa behind me got spun around, tables got pulled in, desks were dismantled, and Cards Against Humanity cards were all over the upstairs, everywhere.
Oh
my so,
God.
I wish I made it there. I was so exhausted after Half-Res that I had to go sleep. But you had like, you had some of the crew up there, man. You know, people from the industry hanging out and yep, playing cards, and they were there till like 5 o'clock. I hear.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
it
dude.
Was ridiculous. But that's it finally gave me an excuse to open up the special bottle of scotch Nick gave me a couple years ago. So finally,
oh,
busted
yeah,
that
what,
thing open.
What is it? What did you have?
Do you remember, Nick? I think you said it yesterday.
Was it McKellen?
Maybe
it's like a 12-year or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It says 12 years on the bottle.
Mm, that's nice.
See,
I'll have to come over for that.
Yep.
Next
we still have half of a bottle.
Well, I thought something we could talk about today was, you know, the kind of theme of Half-Res. You know, we try to split it up and have a general theme of Half-Res, and this year was the past, the present, and the future of our industry and where it's going. But we kind of always have another theme of Half-Res, which was that we're all on the same. We're all on the same path of learning, and nobody is a super expert or you know, is a guru or anything like that. And really, that everybody could teach at every level, not just the people up on stage, but everyone in the crowd. What makes this community so special is that we all can learn from each other as well. So it was always highly encouraged to like meet everybody, you know, talk to your neighbors, and that we're all learning. So what I thought too was maybe we could talk about something that we learned at Half-Res, because there's presenters up there and saying stuff, and you know, we're all learning at every level. So I wondered if any of the presentations spoke to you, or maybe you had a conversation with somebody and wanted to maybe talk about something that we learned during Half-Res.
So something I learned right away was, I don't know, it's such an amazing crowd of people. Like, these people come from, I mean, all over the place, but a lot of them are in Chicagoland area. But Nick, this, I was kind of blown away by this. You started your you know, you started emceeing and you're kind of riling up the crowd and you're talking to everybody, and then you're like, okay, we're gonna get a little hippie here. And then you did a thing that, and I've seen this before, repeated things, and every time it's the most awkward thing ever. Where it's like, hey everybody, like it's pretty much like, hey everybody, turn and say hello to your neighbor. Turn and say hello to your other neighbor. And like 200 people in this room, all of them turned or like, hey, how's it going, like shaking hands, and they turn to the other person to do that. I've never seen a crowd actually engage on that, and every single person in the room did. They all turned, they're like, hi, I'm blah blah blah, like nice to meet you. Like, I don't know if they all had a couple of drinks in them already or what it was, but man, everybody was fully like, no, we're here to meet people and to learn.
Yeah,
instantly, cool. The whole room, never seen it before.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that took some command. That's called charisma.
Well, no, I mean, I think it speaks to the community that we have, not just in Chicago, but in 3D and Cinema 4D and After Effects. And in this, I want to say in motion design in general, it's just such an open community. Everyone wants to share and give. And it's unlike, I think it's really unique to what we do. You know, I think of like the visual effects business, and it doesn't seem as open, or even just other software. I think, right, Cinema 4D has a lot to do with it as well. And
even Maxon's, other cities.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe other cities. There's something really, you know, the Midwest is kind of naturally friendly and talking to their neighbors, but I think we really got something going there. And I was like skeptical. I'm like, are people going to turn around and talk to their neighbor and talk about, you know, say hi? And you're right, it was instant. It was super loud. And I even said, all right, no cheating. You got to talk to somebody you don't know, not your friend next to you. And even then, after that, I couldn't even shut them up. So it was it was a success. And hopefully, you know, honestly, I've been at conferences where that has happened to me. And I literally have met friends of mine that I've known for, you know, 4, 5, 6 years now that I met at conferences where they did that cheesy thing and they said, just say hi to your neighbor. So it does work. So hopefully somebody out there has a new friend and is again learning from people in doing it every day and not just from, you know, websites or whatever.
No, yeah, that was cool. What I learned was just the impact that I think we could have on, you know, you don't really kind of realize how, like, I think, was it last episode that we talked about our origin stories? Was that, yep, was that last episode? I had a young woman come up to me at Half Res, and she was like, listen, I just want to let you know that your story really spoke to me because I'm a copywriter and I really want to get into motion design. I feel like that's where my passion is. And you kind of, you didn't realize that, you know, CG was where you wanted to go until you were already like a year or two out of college. And I was like, yeah. And so she like, you really inspired me to follow my passion and my dreams. And it just really, like, it was a powerful moment for me, like, that I had an effect like that on somebody. That was really cool.
I think it's really cool, the presentation you gave, the way it was structured. I mean, that is really humbling to hear these stories from people that fly around and talk to us about what we do. So, yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was cool.
So I guess for me, sitting down with Beeple was one of the highlights of my night, and being able to ask him some questions that I've had and some of my friends have had over the years, and understanding that he, you know, the answer to almost every one of the questions was just get to work, and that there was no secret Beeple sauce. There was no plugin that he owns that nobody else does, right? It's just literally he's been doing this every day for almost 10 years now. And I think that gets overlooked in any industry where people are always finding like what's the best, newest, fastest way to do something. It's always nice to hear somebody go like, well, actually the way to do it is to sit down and get to work. So it was refreshing to hear something like that. And I can't wait to share more of his interview with everybody because it was so it was so much fun.
It was super fun. Definitely a huge highlight of the night.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, I really tried hard to get some good questions out to him and think about these things and ask friends. And And I remember I definitely had a weird question. It was like, you know, what would you say to inspire people, you know, tomorrow when they get home to make better work? And he just kind of looked at me and he shrugged. He's like, I don't know, try harder maybe. And I'm like, there you go. That's the advice. Good. Like, try harder. I think that always works, yeah. Right? No matter what computer you have and what software you have access to and what abilities you have tomorrow, just go try harder. It always works, no matter like what computer you own, right? It was just so brilliant.
Yeah, he's cool.
So for me, it's just nice when you see somebody that you're like, how does he get that good? And the answer always is hard work, right? Mm-hmm. The answer always is hard work. So that was
shocking to me that when you asked him, like, you know, I think you may have asked him like that, like, what's your, you know, what do you consider to be like your must-have tools or whatever it was? And he was just like, I don't really know. He said something like, I don't know much about anything. He said something like ridiculous like that. And, you know, he's being humble, but really what he meant was, he's like, I don't like consider myself like a ridiculously good modeler. I just know enough to get what I need to get done. And he doesn't, and I think the way that he talks, like, that's kind of how he approaches everything. He just kind of like, he gets out of it what he needs to get out of it. And then he doesn't really dwell on too much of the technical stuff, which I thought was interesting. And definitely you wouldn't know that from looking at his work, because his work is fantastic and looks super technical and hard. But you kind of learn a little bit in that interview about how his brain works, and it's unique. I don't think I've ever heard anybody with that kind of point of view before talk that way about their work, especially someone that does that kind of stuff every single day. Like, that's mind-boggling when you think about the quality of work that dude does every single day. Like, it's like, I could never do that. I mean, that's just, I don't have that type of commitment, you know? Like, the type of commitment it takes to sit down and, like, it's hard. Even if somebody told me what to make every single day, I would have right. a hard time making it every day. But like that, I know how daunting, and we all know how daunting a blank page is. Like, a blank page is sometimes the scariest thing you can encounter in this business, because it's like, what do I make? You know, who know? I don't know. I don't have any ideas. Nothing's flowing. But somehow that dude like figures it out every single day.
My favorite bit there is like, I'm kind of like allergic to like artsy fartsy art stuff, like art, like those kind of people. Like, I just don't buy into any of it. Like, principles of art and design and form and okay, yeah, totally, I get all that. But whenever it's like, oh, like the concept is this and I'm doing the
right,
I don't do that at all. And he is the opposite of that. He is like the most practical, straightforward, like, no, you just do it. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah, he's all fartsy.
Yeah, no artsy, all fartsy.
I think that'd be his tagline.
Wow, but we found hey, Beeple, you could have that. A cheers, buddy.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm sure he'll want that.
Beeple, you got it. Oh my god. He probably finds that funny though.
Well, what, Chad, I'm interested now, what do you do when confronted with a blank page? Like, how do you approach that problem?
Oh man, I hate looking at a blank page. First of all, I try to avoid it, you know? Like, I try not to ever sit myself down in a situation where I'm like, okay, here I go, I'm going to make an idea, you know? Like, I got into the habit when I was at DK to like just kind of like don't go to the well, let the well come to you. And what I mean by that is like just kind of finding areas of the day where you're more creative and let yourself be creative in those times, or, you know, find habits that you do, whether it's walking or biking or whatever, and let the ideas come to you that way. I tend to not be the person who's like scheduling their creative time and I'm going to stare at a white screen and figure it out. I mean, I could do that if I had to. It's like pulling teeth sometimes, though. So for me, I tend to just, you know, be open to the parts of the day where I'm feeling more creative and just kind of either write down the idea as they come or just like put a pin in my head and like come back to it. But blank pages are scary.
It's the worst. Chris, you've been doing some daily renders and stuff as well. What's your process on those? I, I actually don't know how you get those started or how you get some of your ideas for these things.
I think it's mostly twofold for me. One, I have a running list now I keep of like any idea I think of. Like, it's like, okay, here's something to try out. And it's kind of a combination of daily renders and tutorial ideas. But the other thing I do, and I guess a lot of people might not be able to do this, is I have, I guess, 16 years of Cinema 4D experiments I've been running. And I never cared about creating a render. I didn't care about making it pretty. It was always technical. So I often just go through my archive of files and just scrub through. And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot I was working on that thing for a while. Like, open it up and see if I can now take that technique and turn it into a render of some sort. I think my recent map one, I made, like, this map image. It's like, oh, yeah, I was trying to tinker around with this map thing. And I sat down and I kind of made a brand new one completely from scratch, drastically improved on my other technique. And it's like, okay, cool. Now I've got – I can just draw a spline and I get a mountain range. So that kind of stuff is fun. But, yeah, a majority of mine are going through old files and then trying to see if I can actually turn it into something to show off.
That's cool.
Yeah, I hate blank pages. I think that's why I've always been better at, you know, looking at storyboards and replicating them than making the storyboards. That was just never – when I was in the industry and doing this stuff, I was always way better at that, of, like, taking somebody else's – idea and vision and really understanding where they're coming from and then being able to replicate it. And I actually, I think that's why the tutorials that I did, especially early on, were really like, how do you make that effect? Because I didn't come at this from the design perspective or like the artistic perspective. And it was always much more interesting to me to go like, they have way better ideas and it's way prettier. I'd rather figure out how they did it. Right. I'd rather go learn a Beatles song than like try to write my own. It's just way more fun.
I think, in those early ones, it's almost like it seems like your style is more like, it's a puzzle that I'm going to try to figure out. And then once I figure out how to solve it, I'm going to share that with the world, which is cool. And definitely, like, there is that part of, I think, every creative person when they see work that they really like, they themselves want to at least know the foundation of how it happened, and because that way they can put it in their arsenal for their own future use later on down the road. But I think the blank page thing is it's intimidating for everybody. I don't think anybody has it, you know. Nobody that I know has ever said, oh yeah, that's my favorite, you know, I'm awesome at that. You know what I mean? Like, nobody says there's probably people, you know, in concept development that are, you know, are amazing and would say that, but for me it's just like, I got into this habit of keeping like not really a dream journal. Sounds really hippie-ish, but I gotta admit though,
are there unicorns
that, like,
on it?
No, there were Care Bears on it, but it does make sense though, because think about, like, I don't know, I'm a huge lucid dreamer, and like I like that. I like this idea of this entirely other part of my brain that goes to work when I go to sleep, and that's really kind of cool. So I try to, like, whenever I go to bed, I try to like essentially kind of prep myself for that, like get ready for that lucid dreaming and try to make something happen in there, because I feel like that's where all of the things that I've absorbed throughout the day or maybe week or month kind of culminate in a really interesting and weird way, and can often like result in a cool idea for either, you know, whatever, an image, a movie, whatever. And I think that if more people kind of tapped into that, they might be able to come up with some really cool stuff. But
now, I remember hearing lucid dreaming when I was in high school, maybe junior high, and my whole idea was like, how can I prep myself so that I could just fly everywhere, right?
Yeah,
like, how do you actually set that up?
Well, everybody's different, but for me, what I do is I try to, like, when I'm starting to go to sleep, I do like a cue in my head, or I repeat a phrase in my head that's like, okay, you know, I'm about to go to sleep. I'm going to be try to maintain some sort of level of consciousness. But of course, I'll have dreams where I have no idea that I'm actually in a dream and it feels completely real. Those happen all the time. But there's those times, usually towards the end of the sleep cycle, so probably maybe like 4 o'clock in the morning to when I wake up, that I'm kind of in this weird, almost half dream awake state, in which that's the time that I can do some wild stuff.
Aware of it.
I'm completely aware, and I can change the outcome. I can fly. Man. I can do all this like crazy stuff. It's amazing.
I've never had that. Have you?
I always get too excited when that happens and wake myself up. It's like, yeah, oh my God, I'm in the dream. I'm in the dream. Dude, this is amazing. And then I'm awake.
I've definitely had that happen before, where you're like, you get something so amazing is happening that you're just like, you wake up, or somebody, you know, my wife will roll over and wake me up, or, you know, the dog will make a sound and they'll be like, gah.
Yeah, it's so close. When I'm getting sick, I'll get a flu or a cold or something, I always, or if I have a fever, I get the most, not lucid, but vivid dreams. I'll remember. It's like a full Lord of the Rings fantasy adventure all the way through. Yeah. And I'll wake up and then think a little bit and then go back to sleep and continue right from that same spot. I can tell that I'm going to be sick tomorrow.
Wait, you're able to continue from where you started?
When I'm sick. It's so vivid. Man. I can think and then continue a dream from waking up, and I can tell I'm going to get sick sometimes the next day because I had an incredibly vivid dream the night before.
Fever dreams, man. Yeah, those are the best.
They are.
What if getting sick was just the trigger to try to get you out of this fake world and into that real world?
Now we're talking. Yeah. Now we are talking.
Well, this podcast took a turn.
Just went someplace very strange.
I really like these weeks with you. I get to learn a lot about you guys that I didn't know. Lucid dreaming and fever dreams. This is good. I wish I could remember. I wish I could remember dreams. I feel like they're just gone.
You can train yourself.
Yeah, if you write them down when you wake up, you'll get better and better at remembering them. I don't do that, but I will wake up and just try and think my way through the entire dream. Everything I'd remember, because you'll remember remembering, even if you don't remember the dream directly.
I ultimately never, when I do remember, when I look back, I never, the facts of it written down are never what I want to capture. It's always like the feeling. Mm. It's always that like the like ease or control or like whatever it is.
I was at my parents' house, but it wasn't my parents' house. It's like, that doesn't mean anything is text, but it makes sense in the dream.
Yeah, yeah. When you're like, oh yeah, there's just like a feeling that's hard to write down. That's really interesting.
So here's a really weird thing to think about. Can you remember ever smelling anything in your dream? Because the sense of smell almost hardly ever makes its way into your dreams.
Oh, along those lines, I'll add on top of that. Have you ever read words in a dream? Like that you could see a sign or open a book or anything and read the words? Because I just don't think it exists.
Well, I'm not a big reader, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, do podcasts count?
Exactly. I heard a lot of voices.
Oh, that's true.
My dreams are, I don't want to say cliche, but I can always tell my source material very blatantly. It's like, oh, I was thinking about my quadcopter yesterday, so now there I was flying around in a helicopter in the dream. Like, it's always very one-to-one.
Yeah, very logical.
Logical. It's like, oh, I've been a little stressed out about running half-res, so like I have more stress dreams. Mm-hmm. And it's just the source material, like I'm just plagiarizing my own life in dreams all the time. That's all it is.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we should move off the dreams.
Well, at least we weren't talking about specific dreams.
We'll spend
45
minutes on...
No, we're going to revisit. It's going to be like Chris's dream. We're going to revisit this one and pick up right where we left off.
I'm going to have a dream about a podcast.
I did want to clarify. There's actually... I forget who it was. I should go find it. But somebody on YouTube kept asking... From last week's podcast, they say you keep saying this name over and over again, and you didn't link to their website. And they wrote it. It was BEPO, Beepo.
Beepo.
Oh, yeah.
And if anyone out there is listening to us over and over, we did forget to link up Beeple's site. We did, which is now in the show notes, BEEPLE, if you hear us say it over and over again.
The amazing Beepo. That's great.
The amazing Beepo.
However, well, yes, if you'd like to hire Beepo, the clown.
Yeah.
He's available for birthday parties, bar mitzvahs.
Yeah, maybe Mike should just switch it to Beepo, and then he could get the new tagline.
I think we can start Beepo, and it'll be the crappy Beeple.
Yeah, but it's still going to be in Appleton, Wisconsin.
That's already like most everyday
That's
renders.
Every
anyway.
Daily render that isn't him.
We should start one called Beepo. Oh, that
Beepo.
Would be me.
It's really what we, but yeah.
Just, I think and then just take his one from the day before and like just do a really horrible version of it.
Make a bad version of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that, oh my God. Somebody needs to do that. If you haven't,
all right,
go do that.
I may start that. I think yeah, not Mike that ours is it. Any better. I feel like we're just as guilty. It's like everyone looks up to, you know, to him, and he kind of started this everyday thing, I feel, and now it's like, just, you know, like so many beginners for any topic, it's always a lot of learning from who your favorites are at first, right? Mm-hmm. Like it all goes back to that. I feel like it was a little bit of a jab, but I always want to make sure when new people are starting off that it's totally okay to just look at what work you like and see how hard it is, frankly, to go make it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is actually we have this interview coming out as well, but Andrew Kramer made it to Half Res as well, which was awesome.
Awesome surprise.
I
didn't
awesome
know he was coming
surprise.
Until he showed up at dinner.
Yeah, and what was nice is, you know, we always try to make Half Res as open, you know, not just a Cinema 4D fest, but it's all motion design, and it's anybody that's really interested in this business from all angles. And he obviously, you know, does this stuff and makes beautiful work, and so it was really cool to have him there. And I remember, you know, I won't spoil the story, but we kind of talked a little bit about how easy some things look when you look at them and go like, oh, I bet I can make that, and then you sit down to try to do it and you realize like how difficult it is. And he actually had a good analogy with magic tricks, where it's like, it's one thing to know how a magic trick works, but it's a completely different thing to like actually figure out the shuffling and the banter and the like all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a really cool way to think about some of the things that we do that might look simple, but then when you sit down to do it, you know, like my classic idea is like shiny spheres, right? It's like, oh, more shiny spheres. Like, yeah, but these look really good. It's like, yeah, but it's just, I'm like, I know it's just, but this new texture and this new lighting and this new thing, like, and this person made it a different way. Like, it's one of those really silly things, but it's always like simple versus what is it? Simple versus easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's real simple, but it's not easy. So anyway, look for that for sure. Definitely mention people in the comments this time. I'm going to put our new Beepo site in there.
Mm-hmm.
Beepo. I figure what we could do, too, is wrap up with maybe something you guys have been, you know, interested in over the last week that maybe isn't motion design related, or maybe is. Just something you've been kind of interested in checking out. I'll start real quick with this YouTube channel called Macro Room. I don't know if it was just recommended to me or maybe it was on Reddit or something, but yesterday... last night I found this YouTube channel called Macro Room. I'll put that in the notes as well. And they basically, it's really, really pretty macro photography and or macro video. So they, you would think like, what can you do with macro video that wouldn't be just boring? And they do some incredible stuff. Like they really melt a lot of things, which you think might get a little boring, but it never is. Like every material, the way that they do it, the way the shots are, they just, it's lit beautifully. And it actually, I think, you know, I think we might actually get a lot out of it by looking at how textures and how these little things move and trying to recreate that in 3D with some of these particles and all that kind of stuff. So it's worth a look. Check out Macro Room and their latest one where they have like a rubber duck and a Apple keyboard, like of the like beautiful stuff. So check that out.
And they should start selling some of this stuff. I mean,
It's like the most stock. Beautiful stock photography or video.
Yeah. I thought you meant sell the burnt keyboard.
Yes. No, I'm watching one of the liquidy ones, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty dope, actually. I wonder if they – I'm
the paint
curious
one.
To see, like, do they actually talk about how they shot it at all? Like, what's their setup? Oh, here we go, 70D. So it's not, like, super high res or anything.
Oh, wow, 70D.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, if they, like, shot it at, like, 4K, I'm, like, some of that stuff, like, there's these bubbles of paint. Like, that's really cool.
I have a feeling they're just getting started, so they'll be upgrading their rig soon.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
this might be the new, you know, hydraulic compression.
Oh, my God. Hydraulic press channel is the best.
There's lots of spheres in here, Nick.
Lots and the paint of spheres, one, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I knew I was hooked when I watched the paint one.
Yeah, that was cool.
We may have to try to recreate that one.
No, nice.
I've shot ferro fluids before that are kind of similar to that.
Oh, yeah. Can we link that up?
Yeah.
Ferro fluids. I do like that stuff.
For me, my way of recovering from half-res was, first of all, head to McDonald's and get breakfast, which was amazing. And then I went and I downloaded. I've been kind of craving it, and I was so busy this whole past week for half-res, I couldn't do it. I downloaded a Sega Genesis emulator, and I was playing a super crappy old game called Warriors of Rome 2. And it is the slowest, crappiest, somewhat real-time strategy game where you just have like these little guys and they run around. It's a terrible game. I spent the whole weekend playing it. That was actually a lot of fun. But immediately it's like, okay, I know this game too well because I just immediately in the hardest setting beat all of them. I don't even recommend anyone check out this game. If you didn't like grow up with it, playing it a little bit, it's going to be the most boring thing. It runs so slowly that I mapped a speed up button on my keyboard where it automatically plays it at like 50 times speed, and I was constantly fast forwarding the game so that the units would actually move where I wanted them to go. It's so slow.
Was it one of those like dialogue slow things, or was it really old school? Like the whole thing just didn't move very quickly.
The whole thing moves slowly because there's not a mouse on a console, so you have a cursor, but you have to move it like one tick at a time. So it's like tick 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 tick. It's like an isometric kind of view, and you have to move, grab a unit, tell them what to do, move the cursor down to a menu, click the menu, tell it the command, move to a different spot, tell them to go here, and do that over and over again. So the game just ran so slowly, so you could kind of do that all in real time, but instead everything's just like moving through molasses. So yeah, that was most of my weekend. That and organizing. I actually found a whole bunch of old files on old hard drives, which was good. But yeah, that was me.
Nice. Well, I took your suggestion, Chris, and we had talked on Friday. I was looking for a new board game because, I don't know, got kind of bored with our normal games that we have around the house. And Chris...
Did you get bored?
You see what I did there? So Chris recommends Settlers of Catan. And, yep, there it is. And so... I say to my kids, I'm like, all right, we're going to go to this game store. We have this pretty cool game store in downtown Grays Lake. And I'm like, let's go there and see if they have this game. And my kids are like skeptical. And they're like, okay. So took my two girls down there. And we're looking for it. And I find it. And they look at the cover of the game. And they immediately said, this looks old. And I'm like, just, you know, Chris recommended it. So let's just try it. Let's just see what it's about. And they're like, they're totally skeptical because it looks kind of old and like, you know, a little bit, you know, kind of, I don't know, D&D looking, I guess. And so, you know, we get it home and then I open it up and I look at the instructions and I'm like, oh crap, I'm in way over my head on this game. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to learn how to play this game. And they're like they're already got the pieces out, like figuring it all out, like laying it all out. They don't know how to play. They're just excited about all the pieces. And then so I eventually got them all out. And I like everything in the world, you go to YouTube to find out how to do things. And I went to YouTube and because I read the instructions and I'm pretty sure I got a pretty good idea of how I was going to do it. But I was like, how the hell am I going to explain this? So I watched a kid on YouTube explain how the game works. And then it was like, OK, now I get it. It's not as complicated as I thought. Anyway, so we played our first game of Settlers of Catan and I got I think I got my ass kicked by my youngest daughter. Who just happened to build settlements on like the places that you constantly are rolling. So like she was just getting crazy you know, stuff. Like she was just like owning it. Anyway, but now that I'm talking about it, and for those of you who haven't, we'll put a show note or put it in the show notes about this game. It's really fun. It's basically a game where you're on an island. And you have to build settlements and cities and roads to get resources. And the more resources you get, the more you can build. And the more points that you get for building things, you get closer to winning, which you need 10 points to win. So my question to you, Chris, and I've been waiting all weekend, and I told the girls I was going to ask you this question. How, number one, okay, so the now I understand it's an island, right? And it's, there's ports on the island that each one has a specific ratio of what you can trade there. Do you have to have a settlement on the port, or can your road just lead to that port?
You do need a settlement on the port.
Okay, good.
Because normally you can do trade, because you trade, you can freely trade between each other. But if you want to, you can trade like the board where you trade in four of a resource and you get one of another. But then a port allows you to trade three for one. And then there's certain right. special ports that allow two to one. But yes, you do need a settlement okay. on it to activate that.
I was right. The second question I have, and this is one that like I couldn't find an answer to. Maybe that I just don't know. But okay, so when you're setting up the board, and you can set it up different every time. But when you're laying down the dice, do you lay down the number for the dice on the hexes first before you put your settlements? And then where do you, how do you, I mean, really the strategy is like if I see a number that comes up a lot, like 9 or something like that, I'm going to, of course, want to put my settlement like by that number. What's to keep people from doing that?
I've not, it's been a little bit since I played it, so I'm a little fuzzy on that one. It does turn into like there's certain resources that are just very valuable, but then you have how common is it, and then is it adjacent to another good one? So it's about right. sometimes there's like the obvious best spot, but yeah, you just want to aim. I think, don't you just go around the table like picking the spot and everybody gobbles up the best ones that, you know?
So yeah, judge. That's, I mean, do you just like whoever rolls highest gets to put down the first settlement?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, all right. Because that was one that was like tripping me up, because I was like, well, what's stopping me from just like, you know, cornering all of the hot dice roll areas?
Yeah. No. Yeah, you can totally do that. Well, I mean, it goes around the table, so you get the best one you can, and somebody else gets the next best one. And I forget exactly the way that it lays out.
It
but
was
yeah,
fun.
I don't play a ton of board games, but the ones I guess I play more than the average person. But Settlers of Catan is always like when somebody says like, oh, I like board games. It's like, have you played Settlers of Catan? Because that tells you. If they play right. American board games, or if they've gotten into Euro, because Settlers of Catan is the gateway drug into more Euro board gaming, which are these are more heady. Like it tends to be, the games tend to be very different every time you play. Like Settlers of Catan, it's a different board every time you play because it's reshuffled and the mm-hmm. numbers have different values. So you can't get like your set strategy. So my oldest favorite game back when I was in elementary school was Stratego.
Oh, Stratego. Yeah.
This
yeah.
game, it's so great and it's so simple. I don't even call it like a basic version. Well, I mean, it's more combat, I guess, but it's really great.
But what's the difference between that one and Risk? Because I've seen Risk a lot.
Risk is definitely, Risk would be the more complicated version of Stratego,
okay.
where now you're dealing with armies and moving on a much more complicated map. And then after you've graduated from Axis and Ally, or I'm sorry, after you graduate from Risk, you move on to Axis and Allies, where you actually have different units with different properties. That game is great. I love playing that with friends. And I pulled this out just to show you guys. I love that game so much. I went at one point, and we used to have a big pool table in the basement, and I printed up a giant version of the map to play on.
Oh my God.
Oh, Chris brought this to Bomb Camp one time, and I'm like, what is that? And it's a giant board game.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing, dude.
For those of you listening, it's what, maybe 6 feet?
Yeah,
by just, 4 feet.
So you can hear it in his mic. He just pulled out this gigantic poster that looks like he's about to set on world domination.
So did you just scan the board and blow it up that big?
Yeah, I had to do like 6 different scans, combine it all, and then I went and I added like textures to get the resolution a little bit better and cleaned up the text and the borders and the seams. But it's literally the size of a pool table. Like, it was measured out to fit that. And it's wow. a lot of fun. But and you would see us when we were playing. Like, when we use the real board game pieces, they still barely fit on these countries. And you're supposed to play on the tiny little board, but that's a really fun game. But that, you sit down and you play that for 5 hours.
Yeah, I remember that was a long game. You guys were still playing that when I left at, like, 1 a.m. once.
And then I just have God. To do a shout-out.
Were you all, is that where you were talking in accents?
No. That's when we were playing Mouse Guard, which is like a variant of D&D pretty much.
Okay.
Because I was about one. To be like, I'm just imagining them with like, you know, the movies, they have those sticks that they move pieces
yeah.
with.
Yeah, it took us years, but we finally figured out what those are called. They're called Krupp sticks.
Krupp sticks?
A Krupp stick.
Wow.
But I just got to throw out one shout, and Chad, like, maybe okay. when your girls get a little older, if you super get into Settlers of Catan,
yeah.
Here's my favorite board game, and it's called Archipelago.
Okay, and I think I've heard. I think I've heard of that one.
It's not that old, but whenever I talk to somebody, I say it's like super Catan. Like there's multiple economies running in parallel, and everybody is competing against each other, but they also have to kind of work together because the game itself can win. And what? I don't know. There's a lot of I don't know. It's super complex. It's not even that complex, but it's really fun. It's really dynamic. It keeps things moving very quickly in spite of having a lot of different layers. And man, I just love this game. And it's just like Catan, except everybody places the tiles as you go, so the map evolves.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
At the end of every game, I have to take a photo because you get these beautiful like continents or a series of islands or one super island. It's just so different every single time you play. Like I just absolutely love it.
Damn! So. All right, that's next on my list. After
I've slowly, I guess like our Google conversation, I've slowly ignored the new like the big board game movement. And a lot of my friends played it, and Chris, I knew you did, and I was just like, I don't know what that is. It's probably not for me, but I finally just sat and played a game at a conference, and it was great. I had a blast, and I started playing more of it. So it was a lot. I mean, it was complicated, but it was a lot more fun once you knew the rules and once you knew what was going on. So I'll definitely have some questions as well.
In the show notes, I'm going to link to a video review of Archipelago because it's the video that convinced me to get it. And I love these guys have a great board game channel, and it gives you a good overview of the game. So I'll link that for the show notes.
That's awesome. Nice. Well, let's wrap up today. If you want to see any of these show notes, check below our video on YouTube. If you're watching there, we'll try to include that there. But also back on Grayscale Gorilla, we're releasing all of these there as well. And if you're on your iPhone and you're listening to this, please subscribe on iTunes or whatever you use for podcasts. And actually, what do you guys listen to podcasts on? What's your software?
YouTube.
YouTube. I love. I use this. Software called Overcast that I like so much. I have to give it a shout out. I think it's a couple bucks, but it's so much better than the iTunes podcast. And I go through podcasts like crazy. Just walking around, walking to work. Anytime I have 5 minutes, you'll see like headphones in my ears. So check out Overcast if you're doing iTunes stuff. But really, go subscribe because that helps us out a lot. Notes and what else? I think that's it. We got a ton of stuff coming up. It's a big week here, so actually we should probably go get to work, huh?
Yeah, we should.
We got stuff to release and sites to build, so we'll see you guys next
time. Videos to export.
Oh, yeah. We got the new site. There's a little teaser for everybody. We're working on a new site to make everything easy. So let's save that for next week, and thanks as always to you guys for showing up and talking, and I'll see you guys next week in the next Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.